Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 289.
This week on the podcast, Americans are never more charmed than when a monarchy we fought a long deadly war against experiences joy.
And we're still fresh out of witty comments about school shootings. Check back with us in 100 years?
Let's just start the immigration conversation from a place of agreement that all of Donald Trump's words are the wrong words.
And Sheldon Adelson's personal happiness from afar is more important than thousands of venison lives.
Plus, remember when we had net neutrality and we didn't have to work so hard to save it?
And we've got primary updates from the progressive trenches.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
You won't be able to find us or America as it pertains to the emergency services sector
in Puerto Rico anymore. No. Nope.
Because we're pretty much done there, right?
Yeah. Puerto Rico's representatives in Congress who are just there for show,
right?
Basically.
reps.
And to plead with people to do things that no one listens to.
Right, and that they don't have the power to do themselves.
Right, exactly. Have been urging FEMA for the last week to extend the contract under which, like, our power crews have been helping repair their island's power grid. And we were just like, nah, it's all right.
No, on Thursday.
We're good.
Congress was like, we're fine, though.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, you guys got this.
Yeah. So, apparently, Friday is the last day that any of the line restoration crews that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers hired are going to be on the island working.
Yes. So they're just working with, like, emergency generators right now and their own power company, which is
in shambles. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And is about to be privatized.
Yeah. And there's, like, 16,000 homes on the island that still don't have power 8 months after
the hurricane.
Hurricane Maria.
Right.
And less than days before, like, hurricane season, which starts now.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's not ideal. It's not ideal.
Far
and
from
it's 16,000 homes, by the way, is a lot of people to 8 months later still not have power.
That's right.
That's not like seven homes that were remote that we couldn't reach. We're not talking about an island of trillions of people.
It's not that big.
It's not a big island.
Pull up a map.
Like,
look at it.
We should have just been able to get in there, get some power to everyone.
That's right.
I am wondering when we're going to invent, like, Wi-Fi power. That's my new.
Oh.
This is not related to Puerto Rico.
Wireless charging.
But just like
an entire island.
Yes. Like, when is my home going to be able to wirelessly charge?
I was going to say, when can Puerto Rico wirelessly charge?
Because probably some of these people are going to be having to wait until then.
Oh, for sure.
I mean,
we're going to have invented wireless island charging by the time some of these 16,000 homes
see power again.
That's right.
Especially if
now FEMA's not there.
Right. Now that it's just PREPA that's there, which has been the worst part of this entire process, has been that their own power utility company has been
terrible.
In pure shambles since
very
beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most corrupt sort of pseudo-public utility, but kind of private utility that anyone's
ever
heard of.
Soon to be full private utility.
Soon to be full private utility, therefore soon to make power more expensive and less accessible utility.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a mess
right.
over there, you guys.
Yeah.
It's a mess. But, of course, everyone spent the week obsessing about the royal wedding instead of that, so
don't
worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
Guess what? We have a new princess. And by we, I mean they, because we are not British.
We are not they.
That's one of the things that we fought a big war about.
That's right.
I don't know if you remember that from history class.
I can certainly get into some pop culture events that I realize are ridiculous.
Brent watches
a lot of
reality television.
Probably be focusing on something else. I'm excited for the Dancing with the Stars finale tomorrow night. I can't get this.
I cannot make myself care about this.
I don't understand it. I woke up yesterday at a reasonable time that Americans were waking up to see half of my Facebook feed had woken up
at 3 a.m.
to have a party wearing fascinators while they watched the royal wedding. And it really just made me want to start like my life over and have
elsewhere.
Not been acquainted with any of the people that I'm currently acquainted with.
I
don't get it. I can't get it. I refuse to try and get it.
No.
And that's where I stand on the royal wedding.
Our
if you disagree with
predecessors
me.
Predecessors fought a long bloody war so that we wouldn't have to get it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
yeah.
What I already, first of all, dislike watching wedding ceremonies. Like, that's
well,
the worst
boring.
Part of going to a wedding.
I was going to say, half of the people who were watching this on television wouldn't want to go to their best friend's wedding if they were invited
exactly.
in the first place.
So, like, already I'm kind of like, ugh. God with these people. Like, it doesn't matter what wedding I'm at. That's the part I'm least charmed by. Right. And this was a part where you don't even know the people that are getting married.
Yeah. Strangers.
They're strangers.
That's right.
They're figurehead leaders of a country you don't live in and that your own country fought long war against.
He's like sixth in line.
Well, exactly. He's not even.
Which means she's like 100th in line and their children are going to be like 500th in line.
No, it couldn't be more irrelevant
right,
to the royal succession, whatever.
They're nobodies.
They're nobodies. Exactly. And maybe people were just like slightly more excited because she was American, which is the only reason that I can imagine anyone. But,
sure.
But people got this nuts about the last royal wedding. So I call 100%. Bullshit on that.
Yeah.
Like, I get that it was like kind of fun to see.
Right. There was some drama leading up. Like,
right. And,
she's,
you know.
She's black. She's. Right. I mean,
they had a gospel choir sing something. That was cool. Sure.
Yeah.
They had a black pastor make a speech.
He's
like,
going to wear a wedding ring.
Or
they didn't say, but like, I read all the details.
Of course.
I
you had did. To because you were alive. Right, and that's all exactly. that was available to read.
Yeah.
No one was,
but
you
I
couldn't
just,
read about Puerto Rico.
I just.
Don't care.
Don't fucking care.
No, couldn't care less. I don't care even one iota about this.
Yeah.
I did have a lot. I'm like in some sort of like women's travel like Facebook group.
Let's.
Too many people in that, already that's a problem, but too many people in that group were, like, went to Britain specifically to go to this event.
Nope. Don't be doing that.
And
get
I was like,
that group immediately.
I was like, this is not why we travel, you guys. This is not it.
Yeah.
I recognize that there are reasons that women might want a group to travel. It's, you know, it's scary to travel by yourself as a woman, whatever.
Yeah.
Don't make this what we do. Yeah. Don't make us look like this. I want nothing to do with it. But in any case, we aren't less ornery than everyone who woke up at 3 a.m. Because it was just like, it wasn't an exciting news week, but there was just like there was like bad news.
It was a bad news week.
Every Friday we have a school shooting, so we had one.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Exactly.
It was in Texas, where I was right on schedule. A 17-year-old went and shot up a school with a shotgun in a 38 caliber. I know the names of weapon types now.
Oh, yeah. And
I don't like that one bit.
Yeah.
I don't want to know the difference between a shotgun and a different kind of gun.
And Texas being
For
Texas,
years, I didn't have to
had
know
a lot
that.
Of thoughts and prayers. And it also had a lot of solutions involving teachers being
armed.
Forming their own militia.
Yes. Exactly. Hilariously, though, and this is not hilarious, this is horrifying, none of the students that I saw interviewed about this were even remotely shocked that this had happened.
Oh, like, yes, I know. There were so many, like,
so
well,
many
we just assumed that it would happen at some point.
Exactly. Like
that what's happening in high schools across America?
That's what it is now to send your kid to school, is your school is just like, well, we might die there.
Yeah, right?
Like, really? We're letting our teenagers go with this fatalistic crap into school every day because we can't be bothered to do anything about 17-year-olds who got rejected by a girl and decided to shoot up their school?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, like, I just can't, you know, we sort of, like, it's hard to sort of, these things happen so often, it's sort of, it's, they're all tragic and they remain tragic every time they happen, but it's sort of like, it seems so hard to almost like step back and like think of what you're saying as possible solutions. Like I just sort of like, and it was interesting. I was at church this morning, as I am on Sunday. And
classic
like,
Sunday move for Brent.
Classic. And also the priest there generally tries to stay out of politics. Like just sort of like,
this is why I don't like church.
As you're supposed to, like,
right.
as a, you know, that's how you keep your tax exemption is supposedly
right.
by doing that. But anyway, really went in against sort of guns and just sort of was like, actually think for a second about the things that are coming out of your mouth when you say, let's arm all of the teachers.
Right.
Like, take a real second and, like, process that, like, with your brain.
Right. Not just with your heart.
Not right. Not just as sort of like a thing.
An emotional
that
reaction.
You're spewing out of your face.
Right.
It's fucking bonkers.
It's fucking nuts. And Brent and I, both children of teachers, can say this confirmed.
Yeah.
Because neither of us would want our mothers armed in class.
No.
I can't think of a more dangerous thing for basically everyone involved, including my mother, if she had been armed in her classroom.
Yeah.
I mean, if the other teachers in her school had been armed. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Right.
Like, some of them had anger problems.
Sure.
You know? I mean, I just, like, I feel like a lot of people are sort of, like, knee-jerking into a space where they are still trying to argue that a gun in the room makes the room safer instead of less safe.
Yes.
And I think that we equivocally know that that's not true. Right. If there is a gun in the room, statistically speaking, logically speaking, just like brain space speaking.
Right.
Like
yeah.
The room has become more deadly
because
a deadly weapon is now in the room.
That's right.
Could anything in a room be a deadly weapon? Sure. But it's a lot harder when the deadly weapon you're using wasn't intended as a deadly weapon. It's a lot more complicated to kill somebody with a rose petal than it is to kill them with a gun, you know? Yeah. And it's not like the gun, as we've said many times on the podcast, has another purpose that is useful to the situation. That's its only purpose. It doesn't
they're
make
not
you
using
waffles
it
in our famous, as we famously have
right,
said.
Exactly. And they're also not teaching you anything.
No, they don't teach you anything. Classroom. They don't make you any delicious food.
It doesn't double as a textbook.
Right. They don't offer any sort of facts and figures. Uh-huh. They are just a useless item that can only kill somebody. So, like, the brain thinking situation has gone off the rails because there is this, like, emotional element to the argument that, like, having a gun in the room will protect us from guns. When if we had no guns in the room, we wouldn't need to protect ourselves from guns because there'd be no guns.
Yeah.
We just have to protect ourselves from words.
Yeah.
And we're already armed to do that in a school.
That's right.
You know, schools are the place that's best armed to protect themselves with words.
That's right.
that's
so
where
true.
You learn to protect yourself with words.
Yeah.
It's not where you learn to protect yourself with guns. It never is going to be. We should not be sending our 17-year-olds into spaces where they fatalistically assume that one day they'll be victims of a school shooting.
Yeah.
And at the school, they searched the kids on the way out because at Parkland, the guy escaped with the students.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's
so
right.
They all had to subject to being searched on their way running for their lives.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
That's not
it. Did you see that the reason that this happened was because there were too many entrances
into
the school? Did
you
want to
just
well?
Have a... You only
just
want
one
entrance in and out of there so you can
out.
Really... So it's just like a jail.
That's right.
Uh-huh. A jail is another place where you don't want a lot of entrances and exits. The only two places, apparently, where that's the case.
Yeah.
Schools and jails.
Yikes, guys.
In any case, there were 8 students killed, 2 teachers killed. There were a bunch of people injured as well, including a resource officer who confronted the gunman. The guy is alive and is being held without bail right now.
Yeah.
His attorneys claim that he's, quote, not doing well and confused.
Well,
I mean, it would be confusing to have committed a school shooting, I guess, but
yeah,
you would also
you would
have done
it. And you would have to have been confused to do it.
Right.
I think. And also not well.
Yeah. One thing he...
Thinking straight, well, people aren't the ones who are
less likely
doing
to commit
this.
A school shooting.
That's it.
But like many a school shooting, this was committed with legally purchased weapons that
That's
were just
right.
available
were just
to lunatics,
home.
Apparently.
That's
because
right.
they were just at home.
Yep.
Yeah. So, great. Another Friday. Passing us by. Yeah. Meanwhile, Trump had an exciting verbal... controversy this week, I guess you could call it. Basically, so he did this roundtable with a bunch of sheriffs from California.
Yeah.
And depending on who you ask, and depending on what political point of view they espouse, he either called MS-13 gang members or all immigrants animals.
Right.
Now, neither's ideal. You don't want to be the president and dehumanizing really any human people. Even if they're gang members, I feel like it's better to stay away from dehumanizing because that almost, and one thing I would mention to him, if I had the chance, is using that kind of language with people that you're trying to vilify almost lets them off the hook. Because if they're animals, then they can't, that's their nature. They can't help themselves.
Right.
You know, if they're gang members who are doing things that are dangerous to society for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Then they are also thinking people that we could be like, don't be in a gang anymore and potentially
right.
find a way to make that happen.
Yeah.
Like, there's a solution if they're people. If they're animals,
right.
then what can we do?
And
you
also...
know?
In so many cases, we treat animals better than we treat humans anyway.
So true.
So I would question which type of animals he thinks they are because
yeah maybe
he
if he thinks they're house cats then
right exactly like that's way better than we're treating immigrants.
It's true, and I would contend that no one should be treating house cats better than anyone.
No.
House cats are tiny lions that are living in your house.
That's right.
Once again,
even street cats are awful.
Even all cats are a little suspect. All of them want to eat you. None of them want to be your friend.
Yeah.
In any case.
Yeah, and they're just as likely to form a gang as an immigrant is.
So more likely, I would contend. We have cat gangs all over this neighborhood.
Everywhere.
I haven't seen any immigrant gangs in West Hollywood, but I've seen fucking
cat gangs
tons
are
of
everywhere,
cat gangs.
And they will test
They'll cut
you.
A bitch. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. In any case, so he told reporters the next day, no. I was referring to MS-13. I refer to them as animals, and guess what? I always will.
Sure.
The rest of the country was like, it seems like you make a habit out of dehumanizing immigrants in general. And also the context of this wouldn't suggest that you necessarily were talking about MS-13 because he wasn't even answering a question. He was just sort of riffing with somebody. Yeah, he was rambling. Right.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
the person that he was rambling with had mentioned MS-13, but it wasn't clear that his response was about what they had mentioned so much as like tangentially like made him had a spark in his mind.
Well, also, I was going to say, since when is he ever sort of like coherently responding to a direct question about a topic?
Exactly.
Never, I would contend.
And also, they weren't talking about the same people anyway, because the sheriff that mentioned MS-13 was talking about MS-13 members that are in American jails without serious criminal records. She was saying, like, what are we going to do about this? I think it was a she. I don't know why I think that. I could be wrong. It was Sheriff Mims.
Let's go with it.
Let's say. But so in any case.
A lady sheriff.
I was like, I don't know. Trump was talking to a lady sheriff? That could be very wrong. In any case, Sheriff Mims was asking a question that was not answered about MS-13 members in American jails that don't have serious criminal records and like what we should do about them.
Yeah.
Trump went on a larger comment about animals and answered a different question about how we should deport all of them, basically.
Sure.
So the whole conversation lacked coherence anyway. And either way, the right was like, he was talking about gang members, and that leaves the left in the position of having to be like, gang members are people too, which is not what you want to be saying.
Right.
So it complicated everything. Yes,
they are.
They are. So sorry about it. But the larger question we should ask ourselves is, does he dehumanize people through language all the time? And the answer is yes, whether it's immigrants or women.
I was
going
to say, it doesn't have to be immigrants. Yeah.
Anyone. I mean, it doesn't matter who he's talking about. He is dehumanizing just other people.
Yeah. That's right.
And anyone who he's able to other, he also is willing to dehumanize via language. But also, the larger and final issue here is that whatever he said has almost nothing to do with anything, because the real issue on a policy level is that we have been rounding up immigrants who don't have criminal records.
Well,
ICE has arrested 45,436 immigrants without criminal records between Trump's inauguration and the end of 2017. That is a large uptick from what was happening under Obama. And he was up to all sorts of deporting.
Yeah.
That man tried to deport everyone. Right. But Trump has outdone him.
The Hispanic community was calling him the deporter in chief.
Yes. So in under Obama, 16% of ICE arrests were people who had no criminal record. Under Trump, it's been between 32 and 40% of arrests. So it has gone up markedly.
Yes, doubled.
So what he goes on and on about immigrants committing crimes, and that's one of his sort of major talking points. But the reality here is that they have not really targeted immigrants who are committing crimes. Right. What they have done is targeted immigrants who are doing nothing.
But they're going to commit crimes
any moment.
Immigrants.
Right.
They're basically stopping the crimes before they happen.
Yes.
It's like some real Minority Report shit up in here, is what it is, basically.
There's no one we should be able to trust more than Donald Trump to predict who is and is not likely to commit a crime.
That's right.
He has a lot of experience with crime, so maybe he would know. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
But so in any case, the ultimate point, while we're busy obsessing about whether he considers immigrants or just gang members animals, is that he is treating non-criminal immigrants as animals, regardless of what he's saying.
Yeah.
So that's just a quick take on a controversy that didn't matter that happened this week.
Yeah, that's right.
Meanwhile, a controversy that mattered a little more.
Yeah. You know what? This whole peace in the Middle East thing being easy.
It's not.
Remember how easy that was going to be?
It's not as easy
It's easy. It's not as easy as moving the embassy to Jerusalem.
That turned out to be very easy, but it took a lot of effort to then attack the thousands of Gaza residents who protested.
Yeah.
They have like a yearly protest, basically.
Sure.
That this coincided with, which was another bullshit part of this whole thing,
that
they didn't, either they intentionally did this or they didn't check about this. But either way, this is like a yearly event where Gaza residents have like a massive protest that I think coincides with like when they were, you know, fenced in or whatever. But there were like massive casualties at this protest because Israeli forces just like went for them.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is a large protest that happens once a year.
Right.
It happens at the border. They know that this is going
to
happen.
Palestinians were like trying to get in,
which is what they do at this event. You know, whatever. But thousands of people got wounded.
Oh, yeah.
Like
tear gas.
At least 37 people are dead. But I think it turned out to be more. I think it was in the 60s, actually. Tear gas, like they were met with like excessive violence.
Yeah.
Because once you have 1,000 people injured on one side and not many people injured on the other side.
Sure.
And this was actually this is one of the first times, and this I think was an interesting departure, that people that I know who grew up in like very Jewish households, who have family in Israel, who are very connected to Israel,
yeah,
kind of drew a line on Facebook.
Well, it's so
where I saw a lot of people who I didn't expect to come out and be like, we shouldn't be treating Gaza residents this way. This is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Came out and were like, this is a line. I care about my family in Israel. This doesn't make them safer. Which
right.
It doesn't.
Of course, no. And it doesn't help the peace process, like, no. At all. I mean, to say it doesn't help is sort of
a massive understatement.
Massive understatement. I mean, it hurts beyond measure, really, is what it does. And it also is just sort of like, and I think what also a lot of people saw is that, like, you know, yes, that there have been people, you know, obviously in Israel and the, you know, Trump administration have sort of like come together over this. But I think also, like, people have to see this for what it is, too. I mean, yeah. Because, you know, at this ceremony, one of the people who gave one of the prayers at the opening of the embassy is also a person who has, like, many times declared that all Jews are going to hell.
A noted anti-Semite.
Right, exactly. So it's like, I feel like while this may be just broadly, like, what the people of Israel want in terms of, like, having the embassy here and, like, declaring that as their land because they think it's theirs, there's bigger, not necessarily bigger, but there's other issues that sort of, like, make it just feel unseemly,
well,
I guess. Do you know? And maybe unseemly isn't the right word. But I mean,
people,
like,
you
right?
want to be careful.
So
that's
just
a thing.
Right?
But also, like, I think this is the will of a specific sector of Israeli society, and more
sure.
importantly, a specific sector of American society.
Yes.
It's not, broadly speaking, the will of anyone.
Sure.
Because broadly speaking, the will of everyone is to just not get involved
in violent
nonsense.
I was
going
to say, is to be able to live there and not be under the constant threat of terrorism and war.
Exactly.
Right,
that's,
exactly. Yeah.
This is, Jews moved there to get away from constant threat.
Right.
That's what everyone settled there for. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
So this is not even broadly, this is broadly speaking in the political class,
a
theoretical
right.
conversation that
yes.
people are having.
Yeah.
But when we talk about actually making these moves, this is not broadly speaking what anyone wants.
Sure.
Except for a group of people who are using everyone else like pawns.
Right.
And that includes, there are plenty of people in Israel who know that treating Palestinians with force only begets more force. That's not a, you know, and there are plenty of people in Israel who want, you know, want settlers to stop fucking settling because they're just making everyone's lives complicated. And those people are fucking annoying to everyone in Israel because they're like religious nuts who can't be, you know, asked to behave decently. You know, like, this is not like a thing that really like benefits anyone. And they sort of have a similar problem to what we're experiencing, where they have this government that is filled with old grouchy lunatics that are partnering openly because they have, and they've done this before, with people who are essentially openly anti-Semitic,
right.
who are essentially not interested in the will, you know, in, not just in the will of the people of Israel, but in the safety of the people of Israel, because
right.
what does Donald Trump care about the safety of the people of Israel?
He doesn't.
He doesn't like Jews. I know he has a
sure.
daughter who's theoretically Jewish, but she's also like an Aryan princess
yeah.
in her own way and
yeah.
like is converted.
And he also doesn't know what that means.
And he doesn't
anyway.
Know what that means.
Yeah.
And he has denied that the Holocaust was a thing that affected Jews. You know, like they've lied via omission about everything
sure.
that has to do with Jews. Like, we know what they think.
Yeah.
We know what their sort of their baseline for understanding
yeah.
the sort of like concerns of the Jewish community
yeah.
are. It's one guy from a really conservative, very wealthy Jewish family that consults them.
Yep.
And then a connection to this sort of upper echelon of like rich conservative Jews
yeah.
who don't speak for anyone particularly.
Right.
And certainly that's what like once you start, because there is a lot of sort of like there's a lot of people in the Jewish community don't want to criticize Israel, as has been the case for years, because there's this sort of compulsion
yeah.
to like sort of like defend this homeland, that
yeah.
you know, the safe land that was finally there. But when I start seeing people who are from that tradition breaking that mold, then I kind of like know that that's not what's really
yeah.
happening in Israel either,
yeah.
because they obviously have family there, they have connections to Israel
right.
that I don't have, but if they are also feeling like, let's slow this down, let's pump the brakes, then this is not what is on the ground in Israel happening. You know, like, this is just like, this is just crazy people who are trying to make themselves wealthier and more powerful.
Right.
Yeah. And also, this ceremony moving the embassy, or this just idea to move the embassy, continues to be the silliest thing that I've ever heard in my life.
Right. I know.
It's just like literal silliness.
Yeah. Refer to our previous podcast about why exactly people want to do this.
Yeah, well, it's not people. It's Sheldon Adelson.
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. And crazy Christians.
Yeah, crazy Christians and Sheldon Adelson.
Yeah.
Not for the same reasons either.
Correct.
That's what's so complicated about all of this. In any case, exactly. They need to get their shit together.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of foreign relations just falling apart.
Yeah.
In a not-so-shocking turn, Kim Jong-un was threatening to pull out of the talks that he's supposed to have with Donald Trump. Here's why, though. This is actually... I'm going to say something that might shock everyone.
Oh, what?
So, they also, right before they made this announcement, they pulled out of a meeting with South Korea.
Yeah.
But it's because we started doing joint military drills at their border.
Yeah, don't be doing that.
Like, if you are about to enter what could be a treaty-like situation with a lunatic foreign power...
Yeah.
Cease your military operations.
Who has nuclear weapons?
Like, don't be idiots.
Yeah. You can't go, like, the main point of this summit that they're going to have is to talk about them denuclearizing.
Right, and if we're just, like, antagonizing them at their border.
I was going to say, and if you are doing, military shit like this, you know what they're thinking to themselves?
These fools aren't serious.
I probably don't want to denuclearize. Because these fuckers
are practicing for the invasion.
Right, exactly.
Jesus, and they had done a lot of the things we had asked.
Yes,
they suspended their missile tests. They released the political prisoners.
I was going to say, they already announced that they were doing these things.
They signed some cockamamie declaration with the president of South Korea. I mean, they did all the things that we asked them to do.
Right.
And they were talking to South Korea, which they never do.
And we can debate whether they meant any of it
or
not.
Of course, we're always... But we have to have meant it too, though.
Right, exactly.
You know?
That's the thing.
They were. Yeah. We knew they couldn't be trusted. They had to believe we could be trusted to even start acting like they could be trusted.
And you know what? And I think to a certain degree, and there may not be like a direct line of correlation, but we talked last week on the podcast, the fact that we are no longer in the Iran deal as of last week, I think had to have
it
made
makes
them
us
think
unseemly
to themselves
operators.
Like, oh, well, we're about to meet with these guys who are obviously like two-faced liars.
Yeah.
So. Why am I going to do any of the things that they want us to do if they're not going to do any things that we asked them to do?
And the other fool thing that we did, because the announcement had a personal dig at John Bolton, and that's because he compared their situation to Libya. And in Libya, we ended up going in with the rebels and killing Gaddafi.
Killing Muammar Gaddafi, right, exactly.
So, Kim Jong-un, who's trying not to be killed by us, was probably like, fuck these assholes.
And Kim Jong-un also... having probably a long history of family hatred of John Bolton, who's been trying to get us to preeminently strike North Korea for decades.
Right.
I mean...
preemptively.
Preeminently.
Sounds so glamorous.
I know, doesn't it?
I was like, what's wrong with that sentence?
It was so
fantastic.
Close to being right.
It sounded so fantastic, though. The preeminent...
Yeah.
Preemptive
strike.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to start calling him now.
Yeah, I liked it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in any case, so like they already hate John Bolton.
Yeah.
He's now compared it to a situation where we were two-faced liars and killed a leader.
Right.
And so like,
that's not what Kim Jong-un is looking for.
No, he's not trying to sign
dead.
Up for that. Right. And you know what? I get it.
Sure. Yeah.
I get it. I know that North Korea can't be trusted. But I also know that we should be able to be trusted.
Right. And we also, like, if you're expecting to have a summit with someone, you can't be going around comparing them to a country where we killed their leader.
They have ears.
Right,
they have nothing but ears. They've been waiting to listen for propaganda for decades.
Yeah.
They're ready to hear the worst version of whatever we just said.
Right.
So I can't with them.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we had some exciting updates in the Trump, Cohen, payoff, Stormy Daniels world, which is that... So Trump had to file an annual financial disclosure form that is required with the Office of Government Ethics on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And in that form, they reported that he did reimburse Cohen for the Stormy Daniels payment.
That's right.
Here's why they're doing that now. Because the real truth of what was going on with that shell company is going to be so much worse than him having admitted that he did this. That they were fine. That's what I think Giuliani, in his not brain thinking moment, was probably doing.
Yeah.
Was probably he heard the whole story and was like, oh, we have to say you did it. We can't right. let them know what really happened.
Yeah. And the reason is because some other news that we got this week and is that who knows what was going on with the shell company. Because the way that Michael Avenatti got this information was and was able to leak it was because he basically got it from a whistleblower.
Right.
Because there we found out this week in this piece that Ronan Farrow did for The New Yorker was that there was a law enforcement official who is basically claiming to be the source of the leaks, is that two documents were basically like disappeared. Yeah, because the way that we found out about these first payments that, you know, were about Novartis and AT&T paying the shell company and Michael Cohen's was through these things that they're called suspicious activity reports. They're called SARs. And
Exactly.
So this was one of them where we got all of this information about the specific payments. Well, this person who claims to be the source of the leak said that there were two others that are now gone.
Ooh.
And these are the things that that appear in government databases.
Right.
So there are two suspicious activity reports that are have apparently just disappeared, and we have no idea what money was accounted for in there in regards to this.
Meanwhile, Trump is suddenly eager to admit that he funded the Stormy Daniels payment in an effort to be like, nope, see, nothing to see here.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about this financial disclosure form, by the way, was that they couldn't really estimate how much anything he owned was worth. It was all like worth between $25 and $50 million and things like that. It's all in vague numbers.
Yeah.
So we still, despite getting this form, have no idea how much he's worth.
Yeah.
Right. We have no information.
I love it. But he was careful about that, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even for the Michael Cohen thing, they said it was between $100,000 and $250,000.
Right. Exactly.
Like they couldn't even tell us the exact amount.
Yeah.
But that's because they can't tell us the exact amount because what was going on with the shell company was obviously much more exciting than all of that.
Right, exactly. But this informant said, he said a few interesting things. He said, I've never seen something pulled off the system. He said, the system is a safeguard for the bank. It's a stockpile of information. When something's not there that should be, I immediately became concerned. And then he also said, why just those two missing? That's what alarms me the most.
Yeah.
So, like, what's on those?
We have to find out.
We have to find out. We're going to find out.
Yeah.
Now that we know they're gone,
we're
going to find them.
Yeah.
Someone's going to find them.
Anybody
associated with Michael Avenatti is going to get to the bottom of this.
This
like
man,
America's attorney.
This Stormy Daniels case has become the sort of case to protect America.
Yeah, that's right.
He's literally protecting us against our own president right now.
Yeah, he's going to do it.
And we're not even paying him.
No.
He's just doing this to troll everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the net neutrality situation is getting bleaker.
Yes.
It
got a little less bleak, but remains bleak.
Right. Well, no. So it was getting bleak because we got rid of it. So the Senate Democrats decided, with the help of a couple Republicans,
three Republicans,
I think, passed a resolution to save it.
Yeah.
They sent it to the House, who is in shambles and is obviously not going to be able to figure out their shit.
They're never going
to
do it.
But at least there's some movement towards the fact that the Senate did it. I felt good about. I was worried that they wouldn't, you know?
Agreed.
And I feel like this is the kind of thing where everyone probably knows it needs to be saved, and a few people are just trying to be like, who needs to take the hit for this?
Well, right, exactly.
You know, like everyone knows this needs to be saved.
Yeah.
But 20 Republicans are going to have to stop getting, you know, money from AT&T or whatever in order to make this happen, and they have to figure out who can afford to take the hit.
This is another one of those situations similar to, let's say, like gun control.
Yeah.
Where all of these people,
no.
100% of people think we should have net neutrality, like on Earth, basically, except for
Portugal,
the few people who sort of like, you know, run giant
major
corporations
telecom
that benefit
companies
from it. Right, exactly. But you're going to have to get their funding all of these people.
Yeah.
So it like I said, similar to gun control, where everybody, you know, 90-something% of people think that we should have gun control. We can't have it because they're being, these Congress people are being funded by the NRA.
Or gun manufacturers.
I just don't understand why every single member of the House doesn't just decide that they want to vote yes on this, but it's just because the money's going to go away, basically,
well,
for them.
All,
because their constituents are not going to hold them to the fire for this.
No. And also, they're all shitheads. Because if 100% of them did it, then it wouldn't be an issue.
Well, right. Yes, exactly.
AT&T has to buy someone off, you know?
That's right.
So if 100% of people were
there's no one to buy off.
There's no one to buy off. Then there's no, this is what I've always said about gun control, too. Like, if if 100% of people, I mean, 100% of the Congress was like, we need at least some, you know, stricter
control. Background check.
A background check. What's the NRA going to fucking do?
Yeah, right?
They're still going to have to pay someone money.
I was going
to
say, they're not just going to pull funding from all of Congress? No, they still have interests.
Exactly. Like, and their interest is going to be in keeping the regulation minimal. And
right,
so you can go with whoever is in favor of the most minimal regulation. But there's a point where we can decide to make changes.
That's right.
Because 100% of people could just be like, come at us.
Right.
Who are you going to buy off?
Yeah.
We all are in favor of net neutrality.
Yeah.
No constituent is going to hold their feet to the fire.
No, of course not.
And 100% of people think this is a good idea.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
It's... statistically speaking, the number of people who don't think it's a good idea are insignificant.
I was going to say, I started the comparison to gun control. I would assume this probably pulls better than gun control.
Oh, for
sure. Because there are nutty people out there who, like, don't think that we should have any. But, like, everybody thinks that we should have equal access to the internet and, not have it be, like,
that's
insane.
It's insane.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So we could do it.
We could do this. Yeah.
We just.
Yeah. We need 20 Republicans to sign on to the resolution in the House, though, and it's probably not going to get it. And then Trump is obviously going to veto it. So yeah.
No, it's a mess.
Yeah.
You know what would be a time that he wouldn't be able to veto it if 100% of Congress just fucking voted for this?
Yeah. Or if we sent more progressives to the House of Representatives or the Senate, and we really got down to business this week, you guys.
I saw
a lot of headlines like. Oh, actually, well, this is the name of the headline. It's from 538, but the headline is, did Democrats just have their first Tea Party moment of the 2018 primaries?
Yeah.
I would contend maybe
it's
not
quite.
It's
a little overstating, but...
yeah, I mean, like, this was sort of like... It was a little quiet, just in terms of sort of like, I feel like I had to, like, keep reading stories and fits and starts
about
specific
races. Well, because states, it was like Idaho and Nebraska are not states you normally care about.
Exactly.
Pennsylvania is really the only one that you would have cared about.
I was following some of the races in Pennsylvania.
So, like, it wasn't the states that you look for progressive victories in, usually.
Right.
But, like, we had progressive victories in, like, Nebraska.
Yes.
And I want to point out, Nebraska only has 2 congressional districts.
Yeah.
So the fact that one of them
had
a progressive primary winner is a pretty big deal.
Right, and it's one that has been close.
Yeah.
As well, because this was Obama won this congressional district
at
one point. Hillary Clinton, I think, only lost it by like 2 points.
And
Kara
Eastman.
Kara Eastman, who ran like way to the left, I mean, really was a huge progressive, beat the liberal, not incumbent, but he had ran for the seat the last time.
He had the seat.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
He's the former rep from that seat.
Oh, right. Had it once.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. He didn't have it immediately.
Yes. There you go.
But yeah, the guy who had once had that seat was her opponent in that race, and she beat him.
And the DCCC had, like, moved this race for Ashford, like the
former rep.
Right, to, like, one of the races for red to blue, and they were really putting the finger on, having Ashford be the guy who was going to win, because they felt like he might actually... you know, when in November, and who's to say that Eastman isn't, but, you know, Eastman really sort of, like, went against the full establishment on this, for sure.
Because the thing that the Democrats do that the progressive candidates don't do is they come in and say, we're going to all work together. And in this environment, no one fucking wants to hear that.
Yeah.
She came in and she was like, no, I'm going to hold them responsible.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to hold their feet to the fire.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like,
And that's what's going to get Democrats to the polls.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of concern, like, among the sort of, you know, DCCC crowd that they have to be able to sort of like get Republican votes, but like that's not it right now.
No, you need to get Democrats to the polls, because the problem that you had before
was
how you didn't get anyone to show up.
Right. Look, I get that if it was like a 20 point, you know, Donald Trump victory in a congressional race, then like maybe there are places where having someone more moderate like makes sense. I'm not here to sort of say that is never the answer, as much as I hate those words coming out of my face. But, you're in a close district and you are coming up on a midterm election, which is always about getting the base out, because they're never as...
Yeah, other people just don't show up at all, so don't worry about that.
You have to, if you want to win this race, you have to have somebody who is going to make people go to the damn polls.
Yeah.
And it's... her in this instance.
Yeah.
So good on you, Nebraska.
Nebraska.
God, yeah, good work.
Idaho.
Yeah.
Also had somebody hit the Democratic, had another woman.
Yes.
A lot of women won this this night. won the nomination 59-40% over a more moderate, better funded candidate.
Yeah, and who had better name recognition because he was the nominee in 2014 who lost, which is another classic thing that we're classic going move. With.
Yeah.
But so that's huge. And she would also be the first Native American governor in U.S. history.
Right. This
wins.
Is the governor's race, by the way. I didn't mention that.
No, okay.
But yeah, and she was endorsed by Democracy for America. By Indivisible, and by Cher.
By Cher. Yeah, the triumvirate.
That's right. The usual Idaho trio.
That's right, yeah.
But so that would be very exciting. There were two Pennsylvania congressional primaries that had progressives against pragmatic sort of middle-of-the-road Democrats, and in both of those, the progressives won.
Yep.
In the first district, there was Scott Wallace, who is literally the grandson of the Progressive Party's 1948 presidential nominee.
Yeah.
But he beat a former Navy prosecutor who was running to his right, 56-35.
A former Navy prosecutor and a former Republican.
Yeah. Well, that's like, don't run former Republicans.
And that was like the centerpiece of her like whole campaign. Yeah. It was like, I'm a former Republican.
Consensus.
And now we can all work together. And she got blown out of the water.
Yeah.
So
well,
fuck
nobody
her.
Fucking wants that right now.
No,
nobody
exactly.
wants to work with these people. They're
right.
lunatics.
That's not the thing.
That's not the thing that's working right now.
It's not what we're looking for. Either.
It wasn't, by the way, where we were last time
well,
either.
No, I know.
Like, we haven't been there for a while.
I know.
But they keep trying. Yeah. And then in the 7th district, there was almost a bit of an emergency because there were two progressive candidates that split the progressive
vote. Yeah,
and
this was the one that like a lot of people were watching, and this was the one that I was obsessing over. And the person who I wanted to win is not the one who ultimately won, but there were actually two. I wouldn't necessarily call the woman who won
like
a
super
real progressive, but there was some concern that John Morganelli, who was had like a, basically like a pro-Trump sort of Democrat, but like that's a reach, and has also like said like a lot of nasty things about immigrants over the years. He was close. It was sort of like a three-way. Yeah. Everybody was very close. It was like 33-30-26, basically, in that race. But thankfully, the woman running to Morganelli's left, which there was a lot of room to run to his left because she's
the woman running to the middle of the race and the left of the right.
But again, he was very well-funded. I'm not sure who the DCCC had endorsed in that race, but like it's at least we didn't get saddled with him as the candidate. So it was not the our revolution candidate who
primary
won.
Primary strategy
like,
is so difficult.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
So
we're going to get to that shortly.
I know.
But
yeah, so it was
I
was moving on. So
yeah,
if you have more to say,
do.
Better.
No, go.
It was a big night for women.
Yes.
There were 16 races for either the Senate, House, or governor's races that had at least one female candidate, and women won 11 of them.
Yep.
And Pennsylvania alone has no congressional representatives that are women.
And at least three of the women who won in those primaries are in districts that now that they have been redrawn that are more than likely to send a Democrat to the House. So we're going to go from in Pennsylvania from zero women in the delegation
to potentially four
and almost certainly pending disaster three.
Yeah.
So
also four of the candidates that ran for the state house in Pennsylvania were backed by the Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah. The
and
socialists had a good night. You
like,
guys,
what a world.
Where did that come from?
Oh my God, what if Pennsylvania turns out to go...
And two of them beat just Democrat incumbents.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were all women, all four of the DSA-backed candidates.
I mean, it is exciting
like
out there, you guys.
Like, lady socialists killing in Pennsylvania.
It's exciting.
What? Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to vote yet.
I know.
But we did release our prop cheat sheet this week. If you did not see that and you live in California,
I started filling out my ballot.
Oh, God.
This week because I got it in the mail. By the way, I sent you a picture of it hilariously because we've talked about how many candidates are running.
Oh, it's...
When we went through the
voter guide.
The voter guide, yeah. There's like a thing that comes with your ballot in the mail that's just like a one sheet. And it literally has like the, you know, like warning triangles, you know, with like exclamation points on it that says... There are 27 candidates running for Senate or governor or whatever. Like
34 running for...
It takes two pages. Please read all names on both pages because if you're looking at the ballot, it's like...
It's overwhelming.
Like if you think that the second page is a separate race that you're supposed to be voting in because they're worried about overvoting. Because when you fill out the ballot, like everybody's name matches up with a number. And so it's like if you're going page, but you would think that the next page is a separate race, but it's not.
Nope. So...
Because
I
there's
actually,
100 people running, so you have to take a few
when
pages.
When canvassing on Election Day in 2016, I was trying to help an elderly lady who just could not figure out, this was for the primary, who could not figure out the primary ballot. She just kept filling out both pages.
Yeah.
And they kept being like, you can't have more ballots. And yeah, I was like, because there's a limit to the number of ballots you get. And I would be like, this is not fair to ask of
her. No, I know.
Like, this is just a crazy system.
Yeah.
Speaking of a crazy system, I wanted to talk briefly about another state that has a crazy system. We talk a lot about jungle primaries, obviously, because we live in a state with them in California. But my aunt who lives in Maine reminded me that in Maine, they recently passed ranked choice voting.
Yes, this is the answer, you guys.
Which, if it's the answer, it can't be handled the way it's being handled in Maine. Well, and also, it can't be handled the way that jungle primaries were handled in California.
Sure.
Because she's been furious about it because it's not been well publicized. And it has turned the ballot into a checkbox situation.
I can see
that. Like a chart. Like, you basically have to fill out a full chart to vote there. Not only is it not, like a lot of people, like in California, a lot of people still don't realize we have jungle primaries, don't realize how important they are.
Yeah.
In Maine, they have a similar situation where people just, like, don't realize this is the case. But also, and this is something I hadn't thought about until recently, I have been thinking in my railing against the prop system how placing this kind of homework burden on voters is actually pretty unfair and pretty undemocratic, ultimately, because people have lives and they just don't have time to do this kind of research.
Yeah.
There's one prop on the ballot for this race, for June 5th. That you have to go three layers deep to even understand what the prop is about. It's actually about a thing that's completely different from the thing that it's actually about. And it's sort of like tangentially connected to the high-speed rail project, but it is not connected at all to the high-speed rail project. You have to know what cap and trade is to understand what it is. And like, you know, so in ranked choice voting, you have to know what you think about every single candidate on the ballot.
Yeah.
In what order. And that is a homework burden. Thought about.
Yes, it's very true, but it also would alleviate some of the issues with that are sort of like built
with the jungle
into
primary system,
the jungle primary.
Yes,
it would solve a jungle primary in the sense that, you know, because you and I have been talking a lot on this podcast about how there are districts where there may not ultimately end up being Democrats on the ballot in congressional races where Democrats could potentially win, and it's because there's too many candidates. Right, and if you had a ranked system, you would almost certainly end up with at least a Democrat on the ballot.
Oh, that's totally true.
And so I think it would, like, yes, it's more homework, but also it would fix and add an additional layer of ridiculousness, which I think is your point, but it would solve some of the problems that come up in the jungle primary
system. Well, so I feel like where maybe my issue is that it is fixing a problem here that we shouldn't have here.
I agree, yes.
Because we're now thinking about how to solve jungle primers, which are ridiculous.
Right, which we could just not have.
We could just not have those, and then we wouldn't have to worry about it. Maine didn't have jungle primers. So Maine is literally just jumping from nothing to this.
Yeah.
But also, it just passed, like, a year ago or two years ago. Yeah. It's already back on the ballot to revoke it. So it could be a thing that disappears.
But I still like the system in the sense that, you know, this is a way that third parties often sort of like sell being able to vote for a third party and not be voting for a spoiler, because you could vote for Jill Stein as your first choice and then you could vote for Hillary Clinton as your second choice, and you could not feel terrible about having voted for Jill Stein, which I don't anyway. But I mean, you know, like, so there are there are reasons that it works well. But yeah, if you're having to like fill out a fucking grid and you don't even know that that's what it is when you go into the ballot box, nobody knows that that's what they got saddled with in the first place.
This is where I think we need to figure out if we're going to try out new voting systems.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, maybe some of the think ranked choice voting does have certain benefits.
It does.
So the jungle primary system would have certain benefits if we understood how it worked, if we introduced it in a way where every single person in California understood the system before we were forced to vote in it.
Right.
If we made it so that the information that we need to know to vote in a jungle primary is accessible and not misleading.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a problem that we have here. A lot of the information about candidates is hard to access. It's very misleading. It's very difficult to figure out who you need to vote for strategically because there are so many Democrats on the ballot.
That's
what they're facing in Maine too, where no one understands the system.
And that is the problem that I hate about the jungle primary system more than anything is the having to think strategically, because when you are voting for someone, you shouldn't have to be thinking strategically in that way. And it's this, and this is why I like the ranked choice voting, even just for like national elections, because like, you know, you would be able to sort of like vote who you actually want to vote for and vote your conscience without sort of like having to have like this thing where, like, you know, I haven't filled out who I'm voting for governor in the primary because I want Gavin Newsom to be the governor, but Gavin Newsom has a better chance to win the governorship if he is running against a Republican, because we're never going to elect a Republican statewide here. But So I've been thinking about voting for John Cox. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
The thing that, like,
that's the thing you have to think about.
You're forced to think about that, and you shouldn't have to be forced to think about that, because, like, Gavin Newsom has a better chance of running against a Republican than he does against running against Antonio Villaraigosa. I think he probably still beats him. But you have to think about these crazy things when you fill out your ballot.
Ranked choice voting sounds more logical to me in a system where we still have party primaries. Because everything sounds more logical to me in a system where we still have party primaries.
Sure.
I think my main beef with our system here is that I don't think it makes sense to have a joint primary this way. I think it's an insane system that is actually – that's what's creating the strategic obstacles here, largely. Because that's what's creating the split votes. That's what, you know, we're suddenly, if too many Democrats run in a district largely Democratic, why would there not be a Democrat on the ballot?
Yeah, of course.
You know?
I agree.
That's what's creating the problem here.
Yeah.
So I feel like any other voting system that props up, and Maine doesn't have a jungle primary. So in Maine, it's an obstacle where A, the information is still not accessible.
Sure.
You know, B, the information about what to expect has not been well, you know, and this is classic Maine.
So people are probably, like, showing up and, like, looking at a ballot and being like, what the fuck is this?
Well, and also, if you do expect that there's this sudden new burden on you to vote, you're less likely to vote. And that's where I'm starting to find issues with any of these new voting systems is I feel like the big obstacle that we have in this country is turnout. It's getting people to actually show up at the polls. These new systems make it harder to vote.
Yeah.
Anything that makes it harder to vote creates more homework for you. This is what I don't like about the prop system. It's what I don't like about the jungle primary. All of these things. I don't want a system where it's complicated for me to vote. I want a system where everyone has an easy time voting, where they understand clearly what they're voting for, and they're only having to vote on things that actually matter to vote on. You know, like things about what the state legislature should and should not do are not, like, that's why
that's
I vote for someone in state legislature.
That's why we send people to state house.
I don't care where we keep the money for an obscure transportation tax that the legislature passed. We didn't even pass it.
I was going to say, keep it someplace safe.
Keep it someplace safe.
Let us be able to trust you that you put it someplace safe.
Right. Like, why do we need to keep checking up on you? Just do your fucking job. But I mean, I feel like any of these systems create this sort of, like, new burden on voters without addressing the fact that people aren't even voting.
Right. Yes.
What do we need? Like,
Before we deal with ranked choice voting, can we just decide that we're going to automatically register everyone?
Right. Can we just make it so that people can actually easily show up to vote? So that when they get there, it wasn't a burden to get there, only to find out that they're having to fill out a complicated chart to vote?
Right.
But yeah, I feel like, because she was railing about it in the same way that I've been railing about jungle primaries, and I'm like, oh man, this change stuff is hard.
Yeah.
And states are not handling it right.
The change is hard.
And the states are not handling it
well. I still have a soft spot in my heart for ranked choice voting.
No,
but
I mean,
I get it.
I can understand in the same way, I think the reason
it
that
makes
I'm,
sense where a jungle primary does not.
Yes.
Like, it may be confusing initially to start with, and I get it, and that's ridiculous. And if you don't have the information and you don't feel like you had a say in the fact that you were going to be doing that in the first place, it's confusing, and you're like, what the fuck here? And if it's hard, it shouldn't be hard. And all of those things,
The
jungle primary has no advantage.
No.
Like, literally.
Well,
none.
The
ranked choice, it sort of, like, at least does have
an advantage.
An advantage to you being able to sort of, like, vote in a way that you actually want to.
If
you don't know how to do it.
That I could think of as she was telling me this was the number of people in D.C. who had told me how great jungle primaries were.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have jungle primaries. I vote in one. And they were like, lecturing me on how great they were. And I was like, you have never been in a system with jungle primaries.
No.
They are fucking disasters.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah. But so in any case, I was kind of like, I can't be that person to her.
Lecturing her about how
lecturing
great
her
it is
about how great
when
it is.
You don't know.
And I'm like, I've never voted in a system with ranked choice. It might be terrible.
I don't have to fill out a graph.
And certainly
when
the way
vote.
I would trust Maine to do it wrong.
Well, that's true.
You know,
I mean,
Paul LePage is still the governor there.
Right, exactly. Like, it doesn't seem like it should be that hard.
No, but I can believe jungle primaries didn't seem like they should be that hard.
No, and here we are.
We didn't know.
No.
In any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week. If you have thoughts on either ranked choice voting or jungle primaries, let
us
know. Because obviously we have only voted in the latter. And hopefully one day we won't have to do that anymore.
Yes.
If only we could get it on a prop. Maine is voting on a prop to get rid of the ranked choice voting already. If only we could get a prop.
Can we get a prop to stop voting on props?
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Oh my God, I would love that.
Yeah.
That actually, I feel like, could pass.
Oh, I think
people are, especially if we could get it on one of those ballots where there's like 100 props. There are 17 on our general election ballot this year. 17. Yeah. We had 18 last year.
I know.
Who's supposed to keep all that straight? And also another thing that's funny before we go, that people keep asking me if it's allowed for them to bring a phone or a cheat sheet into the voting booth.
What? Of course.
And I'm like, of course it is. And they're like, it feels like it's cheating. And I'm like, it can't be cheating. You're voting. Because right. they were like, what do you do? And I was like, I bring my phone in. I has the answers. And they were like, but you can't bring your phone into a voting booth. And I was like,
it's not a test.
Of course you can. Yeah, exactly. So I feel like if people are feeling so overburdened by the system that they are equating it with the SATs, then we need to consider our thoughts carefully.
Yeah.
In any case, we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.